Our next speaker is Ephraim Gwebu. He is the professor and chair of the Department of Chemistry, Geology, and Physics at Elizabeth City State University in Elizabeth City, North Carolina. He is the director of the following three programs: a Minority Health International Research and Training Program, Support Program for Academic and Research Enhancement, and Minority Access to Research Careers Undergraduate Students Training in Academic and Research. Dr. Gwebu has traveled for many years to Southern Africa every summer, taking students with him to participate in research activities, most recently working with the whole notion of internalized racism as it relates to diabetes markers. And his wife, Kara, who is a nurse, is in the back hiding, but she has participated with him in these endeavors. Dr. Gwebu.
Thank you.
You can advance it right here.
My talk today is addressing the obesity in Southern Africa. The original topic was addressing diabetes, but I modified it to the obesity, and that is going to be clear as we proceed with the presentation today. Coined by Sims and colleagues in the 1970s, diabetes describes the strong link between type 2 diabetes and obesity. I don't have anything to disclose in terms of conflict of interest. My presentation outline is in two sections. Section 1 deals with overweight, obesity, daily caloric intake, and their determinants in Southern Africa. The second one is based on our study that we're doing in South Africa, which involves insulin resistance, obesity, and pre-diabetes in Eastern Cape Province of South Africa. Southern Africa is indicated, the south part of Africa, and it covers quite a number of countries, and at the bottom there is South Africa. The first thing I'm going to talk to you about today is what is referred to as Human Development Index, as well as daily caloric intake per capita. The United Nations Development Program classifies countries by an interplay of health, education, and income. It is known as the Human Development Index. And it's nothing but a composite static of life expectancy defined in terms of health, education, and income indices, and ranks the countries accordingly. It is recommended that an individual should be taking in 2,220 calories per day. And if you take more than that, you are preparing yourself for obesity. Let me talk about the Health Development Index first. That's HDI combines both the health with education and income. It's a formula that they come up with. And you see on the list there, the various countries in the south, I left one, Swaziland, but these are the countries here that are listed there: Angola, Botswana, Lesotho, Mozambique, Malawi, Namibia, and South Africa. And of course, I compared with the USA. Notice that South Africa is ranked number 121 in the world, and Botswana is ranked 119. So, in terms of HDI, then Botswana seems to be a little bit better than South Africa. Now, the U.S. is number 3. You may wonder what number 1 and number 2 are. Number 1 is Norway, and number 2 is Australia. Let me talk about daily caloric intake per capita. Again, there's a breakdown of how these countries are doing. Notice that the U.S. is 3,770 calories per day. And South Africa is catching up with the U.S., with 2,990 calories per day. Both those are really not good for us. We are eating too much, that's what it is. Now, I thought I should give you some details about South Africa and how it relates to neighboring countries there. What I have here is Botswana consuming 2240, and Namibia, also surrounding South Africa, consuming 2350 calories. And then North Zimbabwe, I didn't have numbers for that. And then to the east, or northeast rather, is Mozambique. And then Swaziland and Lesotho. Notice that Lesotho is surrounded completely by South Africa, and their calorie intake is trying to catch up with that of South Africa at 2470. Now, what I'm showing here are the sites where we do our study, the Eastern Cape of South Africa. One of the contributing factors to diabetes in Southern Africa is the economic inequalities and dietary practices of the various groups depend upon whether or not they are disadvantaged. In South Africa, 87% of the land is owned by whites, who are only 8.7% of the population. And the blacks, who make up 80% of the total population, only occupy 13% of the land. And the ramifications of that are that these disadvantaged 80% of the people are usually put in poor neighborhoods, whether in the city or out there in the country. So there's not much they can do in terms of growing their own food. So they depend upon foods. Say, for example, from KFC. You see KFC almost everywhere now in Southern Africa. You see a lot of McDonald's everywhere. And people depend upon those two for their survival. And that increases their glycemic index because of the type of food that they find in these places, unfortunately. All right? Someone made a statement. This was made by Mr. Maboja. He said, obesity and overweight Africans are becoming a prevalent feature in sub-Saharan Africa. In South Africa, South Africans are the leading scale tippers. That's what is happening in South Africa, and our results are going to show that. This is life before KFC and McDonald's. There we are. A giraffe walking around, normal size, that you can run from elephants, you can kick. But here's what happens when after the arrival of McDonald's. It can't even kick. All right? And the result is overweight, obesity, and diabetes being very epidemic in that part of the world. KFC doesn't fare better either. And that's a typical food, whether you go there for breakfast or for lunch, for dinner, that's what you eat. And you know what that does to you. All right? Somebody made a statement recently that obesity rates are rising in sub-Saharan Africa, and that's another statement, really, because it's worse than that. It's not rising. It's there, and it's chronic right now. Another well-known individual made a statement that the diabetes tsunami is here, and we in South Africa are in trouble. And the person who made that statement was Dr. Larry Distiller, who is the managing director and founder of the Center for Diabetes and Endocrinology in Johannesburg. This is the story now that compares urban and non-urban. These are blacks now. Well, no, so these are these are South Africans in general, not blacks, I'm sorry. Notice that women tend to be tend to take a lion's share of the people that are obese. 31% of all urban women in South Africa are obese, meaning that their weight is over 30. The BMI is over 30, rather. Okay, and the non-urban kind of they're lighter. Because of the hard work that they eat, that they do over there, I'm sure, not so much what they eat. This is what we find in Eastern Cape, that 73.9% of the people of the study group are either overweight or class 1 obesity, class 2 obesity, or class 3. That's how bad it is in South Africa right now. And it's not getting any better. Somebody has proposed that it is as the determinants of diabetes, urbanization, dietary lifestyles, and behavioral patterns which don't include prevention and preparedness. And that's referred to as obesogenic, which is obese-inducing behaviors. And that brings about what is called diabetes tsunami in South Africa right now. I thought I should put this one here. Cultural beliefs in South Africa are kind of unique because, you see, in South Africa, when you are big, that's a sign of health. That's a sign that you have money. So you eat a lot to show that you have money in South Africa. And if you lose weight, they attribute that to hardship or some kind of disease like HIV/AIDS. Less activity is a sign that you are progressive because now you have servants that work for you. You don't have to do anything, including washing your face. And walking is a sign of hardship. And you find that as you drive through the Eastern Cape, nobody's farming there, and I tried to find out why. I was told that, you see, farming in Eastern Cape is for the poor people. If you are rich, you don't have to farm, you just go and buy food, but you buy from KFC, unfortunately. Big is beautiful in Southern Africa. And someone did a study, Dr. Pueno, did a study among health workers. These are very important health workers in the community. They make important decisions for the healthcare delivery system in South Africa. And she found out that 95% of these health workers were overweight or obese, 95% of them. So how can they train, how can they educate their patients to manage their services? Our study addresses that. This is our study. We're looking at insulin resistance and pre-diabetes in Eastern Cape. Insulin resistance is the inability to use the insulin to reduce blood glucose. All right? And I'm going to rush over here. What we're trying to show is measuring insulin resistance is very expensive. So what is a cost-effective method for identifying insulin resistance or pre-diabetes? And so we trying to relate waist circumference, which is easy to measure and cheap, with insulin resistance, and we did find that. So we determined the waist circumference values that predict insulin accurately in both males and females. We used the scientific method that I use, that's the QIKI, which is the quantitative insulin sensitivity check index, QIKI, and the homeostasis model assessment of insulin resistance. Those are used as parameters for insulin resistance, and we took advantage of that to determine the waist circumference that predicts insulin resistance. That's the formula for QIKI is given there. And this is a profile of our study. I just want you to pay attention to the weight. Look at the weight of these individuals, and then the BMI and the waist circumference. For women, it is 96.1. Then we use the ROC. This is the receiver operating characteristic curve that is normally used in statistics or in medicine for in clinical tests. Okay. And what I wanted to see here, I'm showing you the curve itself. This is the curve here, and that based on this curve here. The statistics give us a waist circumference of 90 for men that predicts insulin resistance. Here, for women, it is 99.45, and for men, in the QIKI method, it's 90, and for women using the quickie method is 101. So what we did was take the average of these numbers and come up with our own waist circumferences. So we have, what we found is that, you see, for men, a waist circumference of 90 centimeters or higher predicts insulin resistance, and for women, a waist circumference of 100 centimeters predicts insulin resistance. Now, this is in contradiction with what the IDF recommends for sub-Saharan Africa. They recommend 80 for women and 90 for men, and we are showing that it is reverse, 90 for men and 100 for women. So now we're going to recommend then these numbers to be used by the nurses or health workers when these patients come in for the first time. They measure waist circumference, and if it's above 100, they suspect that this person is pre-diabetic and probably insulin resistant. Therefore, educate that patient on how to forestall the onset of diabetes. And I would like to acknowledge my colleagues at Walter Sisulu University, University of Health, who are collaborators in this study. Thank you.